Alexander Ehlert, Professor of Urban Sustainability Governance and Innovation at the Center for Urbanization, Culture, and Society of the National Institute for Scientific Research, or the proper French title is Institut National de Recherche Scientifique in Montreal. It's really tricky to address a lot of the environmental impacts that are spread throughout the urban community, right? Sort of what people call collective action problems. And one of the things that new technologies are very good at is building networked publics, right? Coalitions of interest around, around all kinds of things, around, celebrity gossip and, plastic surgery, biggest plastic surgery disasters, okay, on the one hand, fine, but also around much more meaningful stuff, like green space, like transit activism, like, creating community networks that are able to design and manage complex things. Like, if you want to start talking about how you can manage a community energy transition, having good online platforms that are a tool that's used in public mobilization and engagement strategies makes it possible to be more effective at the local level, but also then to scale up quite well from local action to action in other local areas, either in the same city or in other cities. I have a great example of that. There's the 596 Acres Project. Do you know about it? Started in Brooklyn. And it's a perfect example of how digital tools, open data, and then a strong community mobilization that also works in the real world, right? This is not a 100% digital initiative. And I think that that's why a lot of things fail, is that they think that the digital is going to do all the work for them. But this is an example of how something can be very successful bridging digital and physical reality. And what they do is that they have created an online map of all of the vacant municipally owned land. Well, initially it started off in Brooklyn, in New York City. And then a platform, you sort of imagine a Facebook of sorts, which allowed people to say, oh yeah, I live around lot 77 at the corner of 5th and 22nd. And I've walked by that empty gravel lot my whole life, and I would love it if we could have a community garden there. And you post that. And then someone else who sees that lot and sees, oh, look, someone else is already interested in doing a project here. I wonder what it is. And they sign up too. And so quite quickly, you get clusters, you get networked groups of local residents who might not know each other and who often don't know each other otherwise, that form online, but then meet in person and using data that they have taken from the New York City Open Data Portal can identify which part of the municipality they need to contact if they want to propose a project, a citizen project, to transform vacant land into a community asset, whether it's a park or a garden or some other, maybe a market space or that kind of thing. And the stories that are coming out of that are interesting because they show that people will have walked past this space, some of them for 25 years, and always thought to themselves, oh, we could do something so cool here if only I had some people to do it with me and I knew who I should contact if I wanted to get things done. And it's another example of reducing barriers to action by providing access to just really key strategic information. So that's what the open data does. That's what the online portal does. It puts people in relationships with other neighbors, but also with the city in a way that makes it possible to coordinate groups of people to start physically transforming their surroundings. And I think we're going to see that same model applied to other tricky things. Like if you're trying to, in Montreal, for example, 7% of our emissions, more or less, come from people who heat with fuel oil in their homes, right? And if you as an individual homeowner want to transition to electric heating or say geothermal or something more environmental, you can do that, but it's a complex process, it's expensive, and a lot of people begin the process of reflection and then decide not to just because it's all too daunting. But in the same kind of way, you could use data on energy consumption in neighborhoods, create a platform where residents who are all interested in shifting their homes onto a more sustainable fuel source could create groups and then collectively do a call for proposals to so that they could bid, or so that companies could bid, not on just one home, but on 20 homes, for example, which would bring down the costs, should simplify the process, and it would mean that instead of doing homes in sort of a piecemeal fashion, you would be doing them in a community by community basis and shifting the whole energy systems of the community. And could you do that without new technologies? Well, yeah, sure. I mean, you could have a leafleting campaign, and you could have community volunteers that go out and knock on doors, and actually, you're probably still going to need all of those things. But the adding on of layers of data and of cartography and of a good online interface and all that, I think just empowers people to do all that work more effectively. And then critically, for people elsewhere in the city to see what's happening and to understand how they can do something similar in their neighborhood. And that's traditionally sort of the Achilles heel of local action, which is that it's hyper-local. But new digital technologies give great local ideas legs by creating tools that are easily shareable and by creating inspiring examples that can travel, that can travel 10 blocks away, or that can travel, you know, 100 kilometers away, or can travel to the other side of the country. And so I think that example of effective local action and the speed at which things can travel and scale up is another exciting facet of the new technologies that we're seeing.
GeoThoughts are brought to you by geothink.ca and generous funding from Canada's Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council.